case this morning is English Estates versus Champion Carney. Judge Bishop is also recused on this case, and Chief Judge Hurdle will be participating on briefs. You may. Good morning.
Good morning. Could I please reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal? May it please the court, my name is Jared Carici and I represent the appellant Champion Carney LLC. If there were not any specific questions to begin with regarding facts or anything like that, I wanted to start with our assignment of error regarding instruction number 10. Now, instruction number 10 may seem innocuous. It states you have heard evidence regarding an agreement or proposal for $50,000. You're not to use evidence of this agreement or proposal with regard to damages. Now, that's obviously not a standard instruction, but it was given here. Now, it's important for this appeal in this case because it goes to Champion Carney LLC's core theory of the case. Now, this Champion Carney's theory of the case is consistent with all of the undisputed documentary evidence. It's consistent with all the testimony except maybe Mr. Marchese's testimony. Now, in Champion Carney's view of the case, the arrangement or transactions between Champion Carney and English Estates began around July 12th when that first estimate was written. Now, so that's the first thing that we have in writing is an estimate. After that, English Estates receives permission to begin work. Come help on the hotel at that point. It's obviously we need help, and you can help us. So they start work. At that point, I would view the transaction or the legal relationship between the two in basically a quantum merit type zone where they're doing work. There's not specifics as to how much they'll be paid. There's not specifics as to how much what they'll do in particular, but they're doing services. It's for their benefit, and it's with their acceptance. So at that point, they're really in a quantum merit type relationship. Yes. So they've seen it, and the agreement between the two is essentially come in and start working. Now, when we get to July 15th, after Viral Patel had been there, I think July 14th was his first full day in Kearney, Nebraska. That's when the $50,000 scope of work agreement is first discussed between the two. And so that's shown in an exhibit. I don't have exhibit number quite handy, but it spells out exactly what the scope of work is and what English Estates will be paid. So,
well, and I think you're using a term that is in great dispute.
Yes, yes.
If you refer to it as a scope of work or a contract request, right?
Yes.
Whereas the other side is in the
term. Yes. So from our position, you know, they begin work, and by July 15th, after further negotiations and seeing how things were going, they agree on, you know, what English Estates is going to do, what they're going to be paid, and English Estates afterwards offers to do additional work, which, I mean, there's quite a few things that show that this is not a settlement agreement, if we want to get into this. It didn't say that it was a settlement agreement. It was, you know, fairly early on in the relationship before things broke down. And while English Estates was still willing to do additional business with them, it didn't contain any type of release language. So on its face, if you're an attorney and you receive documents, you're getting a case, no one would think that that's a settlement agreement if you just look at documents to begin with.
Well, but initially, the price was to be over $63,000 that was quoted, right?
That's the July 12th right. Estimate, rough order of magnitude, yes.
So then you're saying they didn't agree to that amount, but agreed or didn't agree to the $50,000?
Well, there was an agreement between both sides as to the $50,000 scope of work, as I call it. Now that's clear. Now, I think, Judge Moore, your question is, was there an agreement that we will pay Judge Moore, was your question whether there was a contract entered into when the rough order of magnitude was prepared earlier?
No.
No.
My understanding is that was rejected. That price was rejected.
Well, there was testimony to the effect that Viral Patel said that he wasn't prepared to pay in the $70,000 or $80,000 range. That's clear. My interpretation of the earlier rough order of magnitude and then English Estates beginning work after that was provided was that it was an estimate. Matt Marchese testified that at this point we can't really give you a good idea of what we need to do and what this is going to take because it's very early on. So I don't think that any party can say that the rough order of magnitude and Champion Carney's, you know, assent to English Estates beginning work could be considered a binding definite contract.
But is it your position there was an agreement to pay the $50,000?
Yes. That's in writing and in the exhibit. So, yes, Your Honor. So, now, why instruction number 10 matters is because it undercut Champion Carney's sole theory of the case, that there was this quantum merit type relationship. They agree on the $50,000 scope of work agreement. Work goes on, and there's further disagreements. And then it's our theory that we agree on an accord and satisfaction where English Estates has paid a total of $45,000 for their work since they didn't finish the $50,000 scope of work, and that English Estates accepted the accord and satisfaction, and that after that this lawsuit shouldn't have been filed. So that was our theory of the case. Yes.
So does it matter? Does the $50,000 matter if the jury doesn't find that $50,000?
It still matters because instruction number 10 undercut the accord and satisfaction argument, and it also was relevant to the reasonable value of the services, because it says that you're not to use evidence of this agreement or proposal with regard to determining damages. So if on July 15th English Estates was prepared to do this work for $50,000, that is, you know, a reasonable person could say that's a reasonable value for those services. And instruction number 10 specifically tells the jury that they cannot proceed under, you know, any type of theory and use the $50,000 agreement with regard to damages. So I'm getting close to my 2 minutes of time, but I did want to touch on the quantum merit instruction, which was an error in that it didn't include some type of language as to whether it would be wrongful or inequitable for the party to retain the benefits. So with that being said, the issue is whether it substantially prejudiced Champion Carney, and it did. Now, let me try to get this out quickly. It damaged Champion Carney because, one, there was no definite agreement to really proceed on a breach of contract agreement. So the jury really had to rely on quantum merit under English Estates.
What is the general verdict?
Well, we don't know. So since it is a general verdict, I think it matters. Now, the other issue is the quantum merit instruction lacking the, you know, inequitable element. It prevented Champion Carney from saying, look, English Estates has been paid enough, that there's nothing inequitable with them receiving $45,000 to attempt the $50,000 scope of work agreement, not complete it, the relationship ends. If we had that language, we could have argued, jury, they've been paid $45,000. There's nothing inequitable about them parting ways now, after they didn't finish the $50,000 scope of agreement. But with the instruction where all that they needed to find liability was received and retained the benefit, and that they couldn't use $50,000 for consideration of damages, we're pretty much left without bullets, if that makes sense. We really can argue based on the instructions. So with that being said, I would like to reserve the small balance of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is David Brazy. I represent the Appalee English Estates, Inc., doing business as ServPro of Lincoln. This is an appeal from a county court jury verdict and an order from the Buffalo District Court affirming the jury verdict. And I guess I want to focus in on it concerns jury instructions. And I want to focus in on the jury instructions that the appellant argued today. And first, that being the $50,000 settlement agreement. It was a settlement agreement, and that the facts clearly show that there was an agreement prior to this $50,000 settlement agreement. It was the first day they came in. The two witnesses for the appellant, the hotel manager and the area manager, were there. One was on speakerphone. They discussed they're going to provide services to clean up the flood damage, and they agreed to that to provide those services.
But
not a number, but the next morning there was a number, and that was the rough order of magnitude or estimate.
That's not signed by.
It's not signed, but it's sent by an English state ServPro representative. Showing that's 30 pages of what is basically what's going to be done in the for the services. It's like 30 pages. It's exhibit 34.
Right, but just because a contractor proposes and sends an estimate doesn't mean he's entitled to that amount. Because my understanding of reading through the bill is there was a dispute kind of on the scope of work, and part of the frustration for your client was they wanted us to less than what we needed to do. And they were never going to pass inspections if we couldn't do everything we wanted to do. But they didn't want that. So the scope of work was narrowed. So it's no longer the $64,000 or whatever. It's 50.
It was after that. Yeah, it was after a few days into the work. But to assume that, it just defies logic to me to assume that a contractor is going to come in and do something and not have some sort of agreement. It doesn't have to be in writing. You can have an oral agreement. It defies logic that a contractor would come in 3 days after the fact, do the work, and then say, "Oh, well, by the way, this is the contract. This is what we're." That's just not what happened.
Client actually testified to that we can't give a solid estimate. Sometimes 2 to 3 days into the project.
Well, they can give they can give an estimate. It's the rough order of magnitude. It varies. It can be 50% below or 25% above. That's what the testimony was. So yeah, they had an idea of the there was an idea of what the terms were and what the price was going to be at that point. But then there's the other facts surrounding it is that they were basically told by the area manager, this Mr. Patel, that they weren't going to be paid anything. Well, at that point, there's a dispute. We're just not working together in harmony. There's an actual dispute at that point, which Rule 408 comes in at that point because you can't, there's an actual dispute, and the offers and compromise are not admissible to prove the liability or the amount of the claim. And so that's, what's funny about this is that I filed the motion in limine to keep the entire thing out. And the judge here, Judge Jorgensen, I guess I would say struck a proper balance between the, which at the time was argued, but now they're changing, they're inconsistent arguments, but at the time they're arguing that they needed to present evidence of a bona fide dispute for their accord and satisfaction. And so this basically did that. You said this jury instruction said, yeah, you can consider it for those things, but just not for damages, which is based on Rule 408. So I think it strikes a proper balance between the concerns of the appellee and the concerns of the appellant. So there basically was an actual dispute. It was a settlement agreement. The judge had the authority to do that, to determine those facts prior to getting it to the juries, to not prejudice them on that. And the and that's what the district court found as well.
In terms of the county court's decision, your position was this is a $50,000 piece of settlement. Their position was, you know, this was the scope of work that we used. That's a fact question, right?
It's a fact question.
Did the judge have the right? I mean, basically, the judge made a determination of which of those two was.
Well, the judge really didn't, because there's other instructions, and one of them was there's an instruction on a breach of contract and what were the terms of the contract. They definitely could argue what the terms of the contract were, and they did argue what the terms of the contract were. The jury obviously rejected that argument. The instructions, we're singling out each instruction, but you got to take them as a whole, obviously. And to determine if, there's error and that this needs to be reversed. Well, there's other instructions that allow them to present evidence. So there's no summary judgment. I saw that in the briefs. There's no summary judgment that they weren't allowed to discuss that because they did discuss it. I mean, heck, the $50,000 settlement agreement is Exhibit 23. I mean, it was admitted. So the jury could definitely have seen it. It wasn't limited. They were allowed to present all the evidence they want. They presented pages and pages and photographs of photographs. I mean, that was based on the evidentiary rulings. But they were able to present their evidence.
But they weren't allowed to argue that $50,000.
They weren't, because that went to the damages. But they could have alleged that this was the scope of in the terms of the agreement. That was definitely what they could have argued. And this quantum merit claim, getting to the quantum merit instruction, that's also proper. It's proper based on the cases that are cited in our brief. But also, they want to argue that there was no contract. That's what I'm hearing today. The brief says otherwise, that there was a contract. They're claiming that $50,000 agreement was the contract. We're arguing there's a contract, so really there's no dispute that there was a contract. The question is, really, they're disputing what the terms of the contract were. Well,
but the jury was instructed to find the reasonable cost of the work performed.
Reasonable value. Mm-hmm.
Now, at one point it said value, and another point it said cost under the damages instruction.
It was in the alternative if they didn't find for the contract, right? And so, yeah.
If it's a breach of contract, you don't talk about reasonable cost, do you?
No, you talk about what the price was,
right.
And that's what could have been found based on the agreement.
If it wasn't in play, the complaint, the actual value of the services was a reasonable value. Those are two things that were requested in the complaint, and then the jury was instructed on the
I believe there's a breach of contract instruction. I don't exactly know which one that was, but yeah, they were instructed on the issues of the case for a breach of contract. And that's what was argued was for the damages, but they were instructed on a breach of contract. But this $45,000 agreement they're arguing that they need this unconscionable and inequitable language that wasn't provided that they so desperately want, because they can't argue that $45,000 was the reasonable value of the services. Well, that's right there in the instruction. It's right there in the quantum merit instruction. It says it's on paragraph 2. What's the reasonable value of the services? They could say, well, it was $45,000. That's what we believed it was. So they can argue it based on that instruction. So there's no prejudice to the appellant based on that quantum merit instruction and leaving out this inequitable and unconscionable language. The court affirmed the jury verdict. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time is remaining for the appellant?
All right, thank you. In my short time, I just wanted to touch on Mr. Brazy's statement that I could have argued that the terms of the contract were the $50,000 scope of work agreement. And I tried that, and I was denied. On page 31 of my first brief, you may have seen, I don't want to go into all of it, but I try to argue to the jury, you know, you need to decide the terms of the agreement. What are the terms of the agreement? Is it the, and then Mr. Brazy objected, and that was sustained, and my closing argument was fairly well shot down at that point. So thank you, Your Honor. I'd ask that you reverse both lower courts.
Thank you. Thank you both. Appreciate your appearance here today. Your case is submitted. You are excused, and we are now in recess. Thank you.
Thank you.